Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today we're going to talk to Aletha Shepherd. At the 2016 Sherman Oaks Film Festival, we showed Aletha's film, Safe Bet, a film that she wrote and produced. We did a great Q&A at the festival with Aletha and her director, Charlotte Gleason. And Safe Bet's just always been one of those films at the top of my list. I'm really glad you get to see it. It's on Amazon now, and if you go to discoverindiefilm.com, you'll see where you can find it on Amazon. Not only is it great, but it's also only a few minutes long, so you have no excuse. Go watch it, then listen to the interview with Aletha. Turns out, she's a fascinating person, as if that's a surprise, but she's pretty much done everything in front of and behind the camera, and she's a great person to find out about indie film from. All right, no more setup. Let's talk to Aletha.
I guess I like to keep myself busy, and I think after you do your first short, which, you know, you guys saw Safe Bet, which was my first one that I had written, produced, and kind of got off the ground into festivals and actually did the best out of all the shorts I've done. You know, once you've done one, it becomes addictive when you're not on set. So you kind of just want to keep that ethos going. And now that I'm back in London, I'm trying, as we speak, trying to get a film, you know, some film collaborators, as I call it, together to see if I can continue making stuff and meeting interesting people and finding out interesting stories. The UK's got a lot of stories that people love to hear, so I'm quite excited to like dig into that as well. And the TV is different as well. The things that broadcasters and things like to see, or what we find entertaining, I think is a lot more vast than what the US tend to plug out, yeah. You know, with pilot season and stuff. It's all kind of the same thing, but rejigged. In London, it's a lot of varied narratives, and 'cause there's people from all over the world that live in London. So
yeah, and there's public support of television there. So
exactly.
I know there's the many BBCs.
Yeah.
But they're not competing to be the same like our networks and cable networks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, BBC is kind of more government led, and then all the other stations have like free reign on kind of, well, to an extent, of what they can broadcast, and they do try to, you know, come up with new and exciting concepts and things. And they even, you know, did this show, I think it was on Channel 4 here, that was called Random Acts, which was a bunch of short films that new creatives just wrote, and they broadcast it on TV. So that does happen, but I don't really see that happen in LA.
No, in fact, I'm not an extreme Anglophile, but I mean, all my life I've always appreciated what filters over here.
Yeah.
You know, and actually some of the British television that was on public television here was some of the best stuff I ever saw in the 70s and 80s. Yeah. But yeah, when you mentioned Channel 4, just being a TV viewer or film goer in the United States, I'm familiar with it because most of the coolest stuff says Channel 4 on it.
Yeah. Yeah, Film 4. They've got their own.
Film 4, yeah.
Yeah. They've got their own in-house production company. So they do try to gurge out their own content. And Sky Atlantic here also does the same. So we've got, you know, a lot going on right now, and it's quite exciting times.
Right. And you've returned with the time
Roaster
you put
off.
In.
Yeah.
You have your Hollywood time notched on your...
Yeah, do you know what? It's actually quite a credible thing. You know, you live in LA for 3.5 years and everyone's like, wow, like amazed. Number one, that you survived.
That was the word I was thinking.
And number two, you know, it's Hollywood. So they all kind of idolize it slightly. So you do get a lot of people asking questions and thinking you are a bit further ahead than they are here. But to me, it's all the same thing. It's just a different country. That's all.
Sure. Well, I sense a little humility on your behalf, which is great. It's great to be humble. But there's a lot of people that came to LA to create and didn't accomplish what you did. So
yeah,
you are I definitely think above the pack or ahead of the pack.
Do you know what it is? I think I always wanted to get going and start creating my own content because I always would come up with ideas and concepts but never had the self-belief to do it. And I think when I went to James Franco's school, when he opened that up and I met other like-minded individuals who just wanted to get out and shoot, that's really when things started taking off. So I know the school's not around now, but
yeah, but that's the one at Universal impact. City, the Theater West.
Yeah, it was Playhouse West.
Playhouse West, yeah. My parents have always been subscribers there for like the last 15, 20 years, seeing plays there.
Yeah, so when James Franco opened up his school, I think it was, he called it Studio 4 in the end, regardless of all the controversy going on with him, I actually think it did a lot of good. Like, I wouldn't be where I am today if I hadn't have gone to his school, because it created an atmosphere where we could create things and all get together with like-minded individuals who just wanted to help progress their career. And we all, you know, were so determined and eager to make things happen. And he, for one, was one of the spearheads in going, go out there, get your film group, get making films, you know, and he preached it every single day and it does drill into you. And, you know, you look at his career and you see how hard he worked and it, you know, being around him, having him tutor you, it did rub off. And I think, you know, that's what I gained from being around Franco, was the fact that he was so determined, so hardworking, and just didn't ever stop and churned out a whole bunch of films in the time that we were with him and under his kind of, you know, school and him leading us and mentoring us. You know, I'm really grateful for my time at Studio 4, and I, you know, I'm thankful that I got the opportunity to spend time with him and learn from him and work with him. And yeah, it was very useful for me. And like I said, if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be where I am today, for sure.
Well, that's fantastic. I will consciously save. I'm not going to talk about what went on with him in there, but it's really easy to edit these podcasts. So this,
yeah.
I'm between us. I'll edit this out
Okay. Because
I don't want. But
that's fine.
But yeah, when I read the reports about what happened to him and that program, I was furious that he was being targeted.
Yeah, I mean,
I understand the disappointment and discomfort.
Yeah.
But you read the facts, and I really was upset that he was being lumped in with.
Yeah. Do you know what? There's, you know, Franco the egomaniac, and there's Franco the workaholic. So, unfortunately, not everyone's going to like you.
Yeah.
And he did do, you know, I am all for women empowerment. I'm all for girls coming out and saying how they feel. But I also do feel like in every situation, sometimes people do take advantage of their position. And, you know, it doesn't take away from the fact that he did a fantastic job in The Disaster Artist. You know,
yeah.
In fact, I had a callback for that film because he put me forward for it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't make it into the movie, but because of him and his school, I had the chance to be in the Sony movie, you know, and to get a callback for a film that big that almost could have been selected for an Oscar. I feel honored, you know, to have even been part of that. So it's a shame that this Disaster Artist didn't take off as everyone had hoped it would. But at the same time, it was an amazing film. He did a great job, him and his brother and Seth. And I really enjoyed it. And that's what, you know, making movies is all about, is like giving your all, and hopefully the people respond well to it. And, you know, clearly he won a Golden Globe because of it. And I think he did a great job. It's just sad that it's all been overshadowed. But, you know, these things happen.
And I'm a big fan. It's funny. I've become a very big fan of his over the years.
Yeah.
So you attended that school, and and then what? And was Safe Bet? Did it come out of that?
So I attended that school. Then I met one of the directors of the feature film that I was making with Franco. I really got along with, called Sarah Scarlett Downing. And I had a project that I'd wrote a year before I went to that school, and I'd never actually got it off the ground and got it made. So she was willing to take it under her wing and help me make it. And I had raised $5,000 crowdfunding, and yeah. So after we finished the feature with James Franco, we went straight on to that film, and that was called Craning. And that took over a weekend to make. And then once we finished that, I got the itches, so to speak. And literally 2 weeks after that, I got into a creative space where I wrote, I think it was 3 pages of a short film. And in writing that, I created Safe Bet. And I literally just called up one of my friends who I'd met on at the school as well. And she came and joined me in making Safe Bet because she read the script, loved it, and was like, right, let's shoot it. And it was literally just a band of friends coming together to make a short film. And it was one of the most fun nights. We stayed up till like 5 a.m. in the morning just filming this short film. So it was a great experience and fun. And it was the short that cost me no money. It was just a band of creatives coming together.
And it looked, so everyone responded to the material, I assume.
Yeah. And do you know what? That really surprised me, because I think it was the first thing that I had written that hadn't been altered. Whereas Craning, though I'd wrote it a year ago, when I took on Sarah as my director, she's an English lit major who went to the same school as Anne Hathaway and Meryl Streep. So I think it was Voss. Is it what it's called? Voss? I forgot what it's called, the school that she went to. But she's an English lit major. So she came in, took my script apart, recreated it, and made it 10 times better. So in the end, it was kind of her writing than mine, whereas Safe Bet was all my baby. It hadn't been altered. I got feedback from my director, Charlotte, and my DP, Luke, who also edited the film as well. They both gave me feedback and advice to make it better, but it was still my writing. I was the one that put, you know, the pen to paper, so to speak. So that was the first thing that I had done, and for it to win an award, and everyone who did it for nothing. I literally just bought Subways for dinner for everyone.
Right, so you fed
like
them for the night.
$27 or something. Huh?
That's fantastic that you just fed them for the night.
Yeah, I literally fed them. One girl came over, bought a glass of wine just to hang out, and she ended up being in the end of the movie. It was just such a free-for-all, so fun, so creative, and it was one of the best experiences making a film. Yeah,
I'm so glad to hear that that people just respected what you'd written, because it's short, but it's very dense.
Yeah.
And it's very emotionally complex, and it hits all the notes it needs to. And honestly, one of the things I want to compliment you on is the discipline to keep it like at 3 minutes, because I know a lot of people, like once they're shooting, are going to be, okay, well, let's drag this out. Let's drag, you know, a lot of people add, even in shorts, there's often a lot of fluff and a lot of fat that needs to be cut away. And your film is so compelling because there's absolutely nothing unnecessary in it. It's just so, I think it's a great model of efficiency that a lot of other filmmakers should see, because storytelling, you can tell as involved a story.
Yeah.
With, you know, I guess it's the thing of like when you're telling a joke, or I think it's the Mark Twain quote, this letter would be shorter if I had more time.
Yeah, and we had, because we spent no money on it, we did have time. I mean, the edit must have taken a month, and that's because I had the editor doing his version, then he'll send it to me, then he'll send it to the director, And we all had a take on it. And in the end, we kept arguing back and forth because he's got his male opinion. My director's got her female opinion. And I'm kind of stuck in between, understanding both points of views and edit styles. So we literally spent one day, the three of us together. By that point, we all wanted to rip each other's heads off.
That's amazing. So there was just three cooks, but it was still... And you were, you as the... And as the original creator and the visionary,
yeah,
and I also find it interesting that you chose to solely produce and you know, not put yourself in it, because I know you act as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what? I'm really not a selfish actor. I just love amazing, talented people. So if I can see someone else saying my words beautifully, I just leave them to it. Like, I'm really not egotistical in that sense. I really love to just give the character what it deserves. And at that moment, I felt, you know, though I could have easily done that role, I didn't want to do it. I felt like...
Right. Or you could have... Well, you casted wonderfully.
Yeah, oh, to me, if you're ever going to spend money on a film, and I've heard this said before, is, you know, if you really want to make a successful short film, what you have to do, hire, if you're not good, if you're not an actor yourself and you don't know the quality of good actors, hire the best casting director you can afford and spend money on the best actors you can afford. Don't worry about cameras. Don't worry about anything else. If you're going to spend money, spend it on the actors, because that's all people really care about.
I think you're right, and it's about performance.
Yeah, it's about performance. If you have a great performance, no one cares if you shot it on your iPhone or if you shot it on, you know, a Red Scarlet or whatever. It really doesn't matter. What matters is what people see in the screen and whether they find it intriguing and whether they find those performances believable.
I say that with some frequency, that if a film... And performance actually applies to the writer and the director too. But if something is well performed.
Yeah.
And as you said, not technically great. And something is technically great, but features, you know, a flawed script or flawed performances, or just doesn't pull you in.
Yeah.
Yeah. At a film festival, I'd much rather screen something that pulls people in.
100%. I would rather the quality was worse and the actors were amazing and I was blown away, rather than watching half-ass performances.
But I'd add that Safe Bet looks great.
I hope you don't feel that you cut any corners there. Do you know, I would have loved a better quality camera. There's so many things I can say that I would have loved, but does it matter? No.
No, I have to tell you, it looks so good. I think it looks great.
Oh, thank you.
I do think Charlotte did a fantastic job directing it. And I guess Luke was your cinematographer.
Yeah, he was everything.
It looks fantastic.
Yeah. You know, since that film, he's now become a full-time, you know, Steadicam DP operator. And I'm so happy for him because he's very talented at that.
Oh, excellent. Well, he certainly showed promise on Safe Bet.
Yeah, no, he did. So now he's got, I mean, when we were shooting, I think we shot on a Sony A7SI, which was his first camera. And now he's got a Steadicam and, you know, it's all got bigger and better. But back then, that's all we shot.
If you were still here, you could make him shoot your next thing. And
I know. If I was still in LA, we'd still be playing around shooting. But, you know.
But I'd also add that the direction and cinematography serves the story perfectly. You know? There's not like flashy camera work that it's like, hey, look what I can do. I mean, everything in your film serves the story.
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting is we did a shot list, but we never really stuck to it at all. A lot of it was what Charlotte came up with on the day. And
right, like blocking it out and then deciding where to put
it out. she was like, wouldn't it be great if we have this shot? She's got an obsession with feet, so we did a lot of like feet shots walking, because, you know, I think it tells a lot, and because it's a small piece, as in not a lot of time, we've got to say a lot in, you know, well, in the few minutes that we do have. So we're very select on what ended up in the final edit, and a lot of, like you said, called it flaff, kind of got pushed to the side, and things that didn't need to be there. We just wanted it quick, sharp, wanted to keep you engaged the whole time, and that was the aim, really.
It worked perfectly. And it was also obviously a very efficient way to highlight the performances you got from those actors, because there's so many. You know, I noticed, I watched it again before we spoke, and yeah. There's so many notes to those performances. I think I've seen like feature films where an actor doesn't get to throw in as many just facial expressions, really, that communicate directly to the audience. I mean, besides the fact that they're in such intense nonverbal situations, I mean...
But I love that. Don't you love that?
Why of course.
Why do I need words? Like, a lot of what went on was visual. And, I mean...
Actually, like, so every you have I think you have, in your 3 minutes, I would name at least 4 or 5 sequences. I think 5 sequences. Yeah. And in every sequence, the nonverbal is so much more important than the verbal.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And that all comes from the actors. It wasn't me telling them anything. It was just the actors that, you know, if you cast well and they have time to play, which we did, because, you know, there wasn't a budget. We weren't planning anything. We were just saying, let's shoot tonight. You can really have some fun with where it goes, and you just know when you've hit the mark and got what you needed and can move on. So yeah, I was so impressed. And Tegan, our lead actress, she's going to have an amazing career ahead of her, because she's really something special.
Was her smile as she walked away from the door at the very end, was that her or was that scripted?
That was scripted.
See, it was in the script.
It actually took a while, that, actually, because she had it thought out in a different way. Then I literally pulled her aside and I was like, this is what you're thinking. This is what I would be thinking in that moment. So this is what I want you to think. And she just took it. And, you know, that's how we got that last walk away, because she had it as something else. And I knew I wanted it ended a bit ambiguously, because I wanted the audience to take what they wanted from it, not be told what the answer to it was. So for me, it was important that we left it up to the audience, but they had enough information to make their own mind up about it. I think that's important as well.
Yeah, no, you have great instincts. And I love, obviously I'm highlighting it because I love that, that smile at the end. And I don't even, obviously as an audience member, I see it as a definite, you're leaving it up to the audience. I know exactly what I think it means.
Yeah.
Because it's such a, you know, you're highlighting such a normal part of dating experience.
Yeah. Well, in LA.
In LA. Oh, well, maybe.
In LA. I mean, actually, no, it's everywhere. But unfortunately, there is a high population of single people in California. So I would, you know, the demographics says Los Angeles.
Yeah, and the 20s are difficult. Lord knows.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just about to exit my 20s. But yeah, it definitely has been a roller coaster. And I think that's why a lot of people loved what I did with Safe Bet, purely because they could just relate to it.
Yeah, well, and if you're better walking away still weepy or, you know, eyes red, then you would end your film on a down, you know, a forced down note. And instead, you say you leave it open, but to me, it's like she's smiling because, you know, she gets it. Like she's like, I get it. Instead of feeling injured, Yeah, she's not injured. She's just
moving on.
She's moving on, which is wonderful. Which is, you know, it's funny. So, and obviously you were there on set as producer, were you?
Correct.
And although you share producer credit, I get the feeling that was your primary focus once you moved on from the script and made this.
I kind of, to be honest, when I was watching it, when we were filming it, I totally forgot that I had written that. You know, you kind of, you see these words coming out actors' mouths and you're like, oh, isn't that interesting? But not relating to the fact that that came from your brain. It's quite a really, I guess, weird process. You know, people saying your words, I still don't capture it until now. Whenever I see someone perform something I've written, it doesn't even feel like me as the writer, you know? But as a producer, it's great because I can get into a different mind and think, okay, right, what do I want to see? Or what visually do I find compelling? I don't like to make things for other people. I make it for myself. And I think that, you know, I was always told from day one, write what you know. So therefore, when it comes to producing, I think, well, what do I want to see? What do I find engaging? What do I find interesting? And I hope that if I find it interesting and I enjoy watching it, that other people will enjoy it too.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, as you were always taught to write what you know. I actually didn't get into your history. I'm curious what... I know you moved out here, obviously, for the film industry. But what was your up? Were you a kid involved in the arts from the beginning?
Well, I started off as a dancer, then got into modeling, and then modeling and commercials and stuff led to acting. And when I started getting ideas and thinking of writing, I just, whenever I spoke to mentors or people in the industry or producers, they would always say, just, you know, write what you know, nothing's truer than life itself, right? So that's kind of where I started from. And it seemed to have served me well. Don't get me wrong, I'd love to do fantasies and I love mythology and I love period dramas and lots of different genres as well. But right now, writing about things that I do know or have awareness of or situations that I'm aware of, it seems to be working. So I'm just going along that line. And if I do manage to come up with something else in a different genre or things that I'm not aware of that I have to research, you know, I'm sure by then I would have had enough experience writing that it should hopefully go well. But that's kind of what I got told from different, and I think even Franco mentioned that once, you know, just write what you know.
And was that, was your experience acting and then modeling and then getting into filmmaking when you were still in the UK, was that in school or was it already out of school and working?
I mean, I finished school when I was 17, so... I never went to university, went straight into modeling. Then at 21, I ended up on an international stage at Miss World. So I was a beauty pageant queen for 2 years.
Fascinating.
I traveled all over the world. I went to Korea, Albania, China. I lived in China for a month. So I did huge beauty pageants. I was Miss Guyana, where my family are from. And I had the best experience. But once you've done the beauty pageant round for 2 years, you've got to retire, unfortunately. I think I retired at the age of 22. And then you get to a stage where you're like, okay, what is it I'm going to do with the rest of my life? I've spent 2 years at the best hotels traveling the world. What now? And I kind of sat down and I was like, well, I've always been performing since I was little and I really want to take this acting seriously. And that's when the determination to go to LA and, you know, make something of myself really happened. And I managed to do the big move when I was 25. So I feel really fortunate that I had a goal. I stuck to it, come to live in LA, see what it was like, experience a different world. And I did it.
That's remarkably impressive. I mean, besides, and not the beauty thing, which is just that's just the good fortune of genetics, but but the travel, the cultures you've experienced and the places you've lived, that's so beneficial to an artist.
Yeah. And, you know, even living in LA, it's so different to London. I always say, before you're 30, go live somewhere else, survive somewhere else, go see the world, you know, because it's so big. And I've been so fortunate to travel pretty much every continent that I feel it does add depth. And I do have appreciation for other cultures and civilizations and people. And you know, it just allows you to adapt as a person. If you don't keep growing, then you have no stories to tell.
Absolutely. Well, so as far as stories to tell, I know you were saying that you're working on some other things.
Yeah, and it's totally different to the stuff I was doing in LA. I'm no longer single, so that helps. You know, no longer got the single life drama thing anymore, but it also means I've grown up and my stories have grown up with me. And you know, I think I'm writing more literature based stuff with integrity and things behind it and a lot of meaning. And hopefully within this year I can get some stuff off the ground. So I would love to do my first feature this year. That's the aim.
And when you say do, that's just writing and producing?
Well, I'm not so fussed about writing it myself, but definitely producing my first feature. That's my aim by the end of the year.
So after your experience making a few shorts and working in LA, but you found that your skill set, it seems like your natural talents actually do lean most towards producing.
Yeah, I would say that, but then I would say directing as well. I directed a short before I left LA. And when I came back to London, I went to the London Film School. So I've been studying at film school directing. And
okay. See, I didn't know that, because that one's not on your list yet.
Yeah, no, because you hadn't seen anything I directed yet. But so I got a taste for it. And I think always when I was producing, I was always behind the monitor. I was always giving my feedback to actors. So it's always been there. As an actor myself, you can't help but do that. So it just felt like a natural progression, really.
Right. So even though you started with writing, now you're definitely leaning towards producing and possibly directing.
Correct. Yeah, that's where it's going.
You're a filmmaker.
And obviously my acting is chugging along. Actually, I got a lead in an indie film that I'm shooting in India coming up this year. So that's exciting.
Wow. And it's interesting to me. I don't know if it's your humility, but so you don't bother casting yourself, but you put yourself out there to act for others.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've been in my own training, which the first short I wrote, which I'm in, that got into the LA International Shorts Festival. It actually got offered distribution.
right, and that's Craning?
And yeah, Craning, the first short that I ever did that I raised $5,000 for, that I did with Sarah, the one Sarah Scarlett Downing. We, the first, very first short, just before I did Safe Bet, that film that I actually star in it. And that film got offered distribution and VOD as well as TV broadcast. And it got into the LA International Shorts, which is a big festival in LA. So I'm very fortunate with that film, and I'm the lead in it. So I do acting. I just don't like boasting about it. And I don't necessarily feel like I have to put myself in every film that I do.
Although you made a conscious choice, because I admit, I do wonder why you're not the girlfriend who appears at the end behind the date.
Yeah. Like I said, I felt like that girl was perfect for the role. So I don't have to do everything.
She, you know what? She was perfect. The look she gives.
Exactly. Exactly.
Her wordless performance, she said a lot.
And sometimes, you know, it's nice to be behind the scenes, to not have to put the makeup on, not have to go into character, just think about the story itself. You know, I love both equally. Obviously, I love acting a lot, because that's my main thing. But filmmaking, you know, it's definitely a heartbeat of mine. So, though I'm not, you know, saying, oh, I'm in this, I'm in that, I'm doing this acting wise, both of them I do trog along just as equally. I put as much effort into my acting on screen as I do with my filmmaking.
Well, that's excellent too, because Lord knows filmmakers can get frustrated with the long pauses between work.
Yeah.
So you are still on sets and you're still part of it.
Exactly.
As an artist, as an actor.
Yeah, and it's good because I've got this part in India, and it's so nice working with a director because I learn. I mean, I'm in rehearsals right now for it, so I'm learning so much by working with another director as well. You know, watching his process, watching the producers, the way they talk to me as an artist, and, you know, they're telling me about locations and setups and conversing with other actors. It's nice to see how other people do it as well. As so when I go back onto set, I can bring everything I've learned from working on other people's sets and working with other producers and directors and bring that to my environment, what I loved from that, and take it with me.
It's fantastic. That's very, you're very well-rounded, which I don't think is easy in this world.
No. And, you know, it's really interesting because a lot of actresses, they feel like they have to make it before they start making or getting involved in the creative process. But to me, they go hand in hand. I would love that both my acting and my filmmaking kind of skyrocketed at the same time, because I'm just as passionate about it all. Whereas I know a lot of actors, you know, want to get to the top and then start creating. But I think it can be done at the same time. So that's what I'm aiming for anyway.
I think you're right. And then Lord knows, if you end up at the top of acting, you will have these other works already behind you.
Yeah.
As a writer and producer, creator, and probably director. Yeah. And then it'll be very natural to say, you know, I also want to do this, because you already have done it. It won't be that situation where I do remember Tom Hanks giving interviews for that thing you do, where he said, yeah, I pretty much used up all my goodwill on this because it was such a stretch.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? It's interesting. Like, for me, art is art. So as long as I can be involved in some artistic expression and I'm passionate about it, I love it. So if I'm the actress, I'll love it. Just like the project in India that I'm on, I'm so ecstatic about that. And if it's about a feature film that I'm doing and it's a script I read and I love it, it's art, and I love creating art in both extremes. So I'm happy to stretch myself and, you know, be involved in any aspect as long as I, you know, I'm happy doing what I'm doing.
I actually said to Aletha right after she made that statement that that's where I was going to cut the podcast off, because that was kind of the perfect sentiment. All right. Well, once again, you should really go to discoverindiefilm.com. There you'll find a link to Aletha's short film, Safe Bet. And of course, you'll find a lot of other great short films at discoverindiefilm.com, as well as some links to some really great feature films. You can learn about the Sherman Oaks Film Festival that comes up in November. And there's info about Film Invasion LA, which is a festival we hold in June. I actually just wrapped up Film Invasion LA, and that's why there was a little break between podcasts. All right. Thanks for listening.